the Edge with April Mahoney Brains. Here, this is the place where the conversation is pointed, the guests are sharp, and the responses are never dull. Welcome home, Brains.
Coming to you straight from San Diego, California, let's welcome our host, April Mahoney.
Hello, Brains, and welcome to On the Edge with April Mahoney. Today, we're calling from the nursery, yes, with midwife Jackie. Well, I don't know if I want to call her Jackie or Jacqueline. We'll start with Jacqueline Hendrick. She is a powerhouse. She is a woman's health nurse practitioner. She has worked in the cardiac division of the hospital. She's been a registered nurse or is a registered nurse. She's working with women during their pregnancy. I'm telling you, we could go on and on and on. But this show is going to be dedicated to all things birth because that's the giving of life. We need to take it serious. We need to know how to take care of ourselves. We need to know about the options that are provided out there. And so she's going to talk with us here in the nursery on the Edge. Welcome her to the Edge. Can I call you Jackie?
Jackie's perfect, April. Thank you so much.
Jackie Hendricks, thank you. My brains are so happy to have you here. I think that you're awesome sauce. I ran across you on social media, and I had to reach out to you and embrace you, your skill set, your talent, your wanting to do this, and your ability to do this, because giving birth is no joke. So tell us, Jackie, where did it all begin for you? How did you decide to pick this as your field of expertise in healthcare?
Well, actually, April, I think a lot of most folks that end up in a career path have many things that lead them on the way. And most likely I would have to reach back to my grandfather being a family physician, my father working in the hospital in radiology, my mother having nine children easily.
Nine children, yes.
And with grace and a great example that birth is a normal, natural event. Subsequently, my own two natural births, which were also extremely empowering as a young woman. And then finally, what led me to midwifery was working as a neonatal intensive care nurse, attending births to receive babies at risk and seeing so many medical interventions and also so much disrespect, if you will, of women in their choices and their empowerment or lack of it during their own births. So that's kind of it in a nutshell, but I could go on for a while with what took me to midwifery.
Well, I mean, I think that this is so important. Now, I want you to explain to me and my brains kind of the difference between certain things. And I know that everybody has their lane they drive in, but ultimately they're all headed to the same direction. Now, there is your regular OBGYN practitioner, doctor. There is a midwife. There's doulas. Can you tell us what's the differentiator and what's the common denominator?
Sure. Well, the common denominator is the easiest one to start with. We are all there to support women and their families around pregnancy and birth and their postpartum period. Midwives, well, let's start with physicians. I think most people are fairly clear on physicians. In the obstetric field, actually the most obstetricians see themselves foremost as surgeons, and that's actually what their training is in, and they're most excellent in it. And, of course, we need that skill many times. But they are trained mostly in the illnesses or outliers of women during pregnancy and birth, which is also a great talent and education to have, a skill set we need. Midwives, on the other hand, can be trained through different pathways. I happen to have been a nurse, so I continued on the nurse pathway as a certified nurse midwife. But I certainly have other colleagues who are practicing as licensed midwives and lay midwives who have a great deal to contribute and take care of women in the same way that I do. Low-risk women, perhaps in birth centers or home births. Although certified nurse midwives do care for women across the spectrum of where birth happens. Mm-hmm. I think that's kind of, so we differentiate, we don't do surgery, although certified nurse midwives do help with surgery, so we can be the first assistant at a cesarean birth, which is awesome because we can stay with our moms who end up having to have their birth in that pathway. But generally, we're caring for healthy women who are, quote, only pregnant and just having a baby in a most natural, normal way that's been going on since, you know, humans have been here. Doulas, I think, are often confused with midwives just because midwives have not really been able to get our message across clearly about the differences. But doulas are amazing and wonderful women who just can come from any walk of life, anywhere in the community with an interest in supporting women and their families in birth. And generally they take a training through an organization called Doulas of North America. And they learn how to support women with challenges with pain or baby positions or, you know, family members, breastfeeding, all kinds of things. And they stay with the woman as a support that's emotional and non-medical. And we are very fortunate in one of the places I work at UC San Diego to have a volunteer doula program called the Heart Enhanced Doula Program, which is an amazing gift to our moms, where these women actually give up and volunteer hours and even days of their time to support women in labor as a volunteer.
Wow. That's amazing. I remember my birthing experience with my husband. It was just absolutely awesome sauce. I went through it. I controlled the breathing, all of that. I got a little epidural. I'm not epidural. I got a little Demerol. I'm not embarrassed to say it. It took the edge off, okay, because it's work.
Right.
It's work, but it was wonderful. And there was a young woman that was in the bed next to us that had no one, and my husband kind of helped facilitate and coach her as well. It was such a great experience. So many people now are able to see pictures of their fetus inside of the womb with the ultrasound and be able to follow the birth through that. And, you know, if they have complications, they're able to work through it with their physician. So I thank you for taking this as a field of study, especially as a woman, to, you know, to comfort. There's a lot of men that are in obstetrics and gynecology, and I don't care how much training they have in the world, they never know how it feels to give birth. So when you get through the birthing process, there's so many options now out there. There's home birth, there's underwater birthing, there's clinical birthing, you know, and then there's birthing in tribal communities where there's no anesthesia and there's no medical care. What are you seeing are kind of the trends now for women wanting to give birth? Is it still, you know, traditional in the hospital kind of setting? Are you seeing the underwater births? What trends are you seeing?
I think that there is definitely and has been a shift in the way women are choosing to give birth. And I think a lot of it has to do with the kind of the Me Too movement and the continuation of women not asking anymore but taking their power back. Some of the constraints on women, I would say the biggest constraint on women in choosing their place of birth is insurance. That is taking away their choice. So if they have to pay the whole fee because insurance will not approve a birth center birth, then they are most of the time forced to go to a hospital because they can't, you know, come up with thousands of dollars for prenatal care in a birth center or even a home birth. So that's probably the biggest driver.
You know, there's a lot of
like.
Mm-hmm. No, I'm sorry. There's a lot of things going on too with surrogates. You know, in the last, I'm just going to use a ballpark figure, 15 years, that has really become the phenomenon where women are carrying the child for another woman. Have you come across any kind of surrogate experiences like that? What does that feel like? To me, again, I'm being honest, it feels so foreign. But then, too, I can see how they're very connected. You know, there's a lot of celebrities that are using surrogates now. what is the mindset or what is the energy in a room like that when a surrogate has the baby and she gives it over to the new mom?
I actually have been involved in that situation many times, too many that I remember, due to having been in the neonatal intensive care environment. So, because a lot of those surrogate pregnancies, especially in the past, say 20 years ago, 15 years ago, involved multiples. So, you know, many or several embryos were implanted, and so there would be someone, you know, sometimes two or three babies, which made that pregnancy higher risk, and those babies had a higher likelihood to come to the NICU. So through that, I met surrogate parents and mothers. I also had a dear friend who had two surrogate pregnancies for the same family. One was a twin pregnancy. Actually, originally, it seemed, and still does a lot of the time, like an amazing gift for the people that are doing this with such open heart and such wanting to help another family have their own baby. But recently, it has become a little concerning in the sense of who can afford to, you know, buy a surrogate pregnancy. So it's it's becoming a little more unclear about how that's going to be going. And I see some legislating being discussed about trying to put a cap on that in some way. So I'm not quite sure how it's going to end up. But the ones I've been involved in have been amazing and beautiful. And all parties involved have been thrilled to have been able to have that experience with each other.
Well, I wonder if they're going to put legislation on the sperm bank. I'm just saying. You know, you can't tell the woman how and who to deliver the baby for, but let's see if you can put some regulation on how much sperm you contribute to the sperm bank. Another thing that I found very interesting out there in the world is women breastfeeding and providing milk, breast milk, for another woman's child. Now, again, I'm going to let you speak from your clinical expertise. You've done this, you know this, but to me, that seems very foreign. It seems like, you know, when you're nursing a child, that is the most intimate thing that you can do when you bring the child to the world. I'm thinking through the milk, you're taking on their DNA, you're taking on their genetics, you're taking on their antibodies, all of that. What does that look like in the real world? Because there's places that provide breast milk, and women just, you know, they provide it.
Well, again, speaking from my experience in neonatal intensive care, we had an amazing advocate neonatologist and expert in breastfeeding, Dr. Nancy White, who had provided, ensured that all the babies in the nursery I was in here in San Diego had access to donor breast milk because they were already such high risk for, you know, that formula could be very difficult or impossible for them to digest. The donor breast milk, which is a huge, huge gift to those babies, is actually processed. And, you know, there's quite a bit of care that goes into ensuring that that milk is very safe and there's no harm coming to a baby. There's only the good coming to the baby. So that donor milk process has been going on for years. And there's two banks in San Diego now that have donor milk for all babies who need it. I think the part you might be speaking to is when actually women, quote, share with one another. And I have known many, many women and midwife friends who have done that, sometimes sisters who come forward. And I think generally they're not breastfeeding another baby, but they're providing the milk. And I think the women who that I know who have accepted that milk feel confident the woman they're receiving it from is medically, you know, healthy. Overall, generally the big organizations do not recommend milk sharing. like that, but there are milk banks, even on Facebook, for moms in different communities to share milk amongst themselves. So it is a long history of, wet nurses, if you will, that way back that were breastfeeding
centuries,
the entire time.
That's what they had slave women do, right? The slave women provided the nutrition for the baby. So this is nothing new. This is
nothing
revolutionary.
New.
You know, and again, maybe it made people stronger. They don't think that they are, you know, of mixed race, but let me tell you, that milk was. I want to jump in.
Yes, it saves it.
I want to jump in a little bit into the mental health aspect of it. You know, giving birth is a lot of work. It's a lot of hormones that are flying all over the place. It's a lot of relationship management. It's a lot of expectations. When women go through this, can you give them some signs or give them some suggestions or something to look towards to after they have birth and it's not going the way maybe they thought it was? Maybe they're experiencing some postpartum depression. What are some of the things that maybe they can look at within inside themselves to say, hey, you know what, this is an indicator that something's not going right. Maybe I need an additional help, some additional help. Can you give us some suggestions?
Surely, yeah. This is a huge thing, as you say. For my practice, I think it's a conversation that happens throughout pregnancy. And actually, many women today are already experiencing anxiety and or depression in pregnancy. So we have the opportunity to be working with that throughout their whole pregnancy. We do have generally access to some sort of mental health provider, social work, so that we could get moms linked into that during the pregnancy, so if things are a little unstable afterward, they already have that access and that anchor, and they don't have to struggle to figure out who they're going to contact. Another thing that we're doing with mental health is, and other issues too, where so many women in America are dying in childbirth and pregnancy and postpartum compared to the rest of the world, is trying to bring back the mom at a two-week visit instead of waiting 6 full weeks. And so she has the opportunity to check in, because most baby blues last about 2 weeks. That's kind of a typical exhaustion, depression, hormone change, which we call baby blues. That usually resolves.
Right.
But after that time frame, if we have continued or worsening signs of actual depression, it would be awesome to have that mom right in front of us and give her the opportunity to, you know, feel comfortable telling us exactly how she does feel. Because there still is a stigma saying, I've thought about harming my baby, or I feel like
right.
I'm going to lose my mind. And so to support those things as being not out of the ordinary and be able to offer help as soon as possible is my goal.
Well, I think that that's beautiful that you have started the practice of teaching women how to cope and look for signs and get support during the pregnancy instead of just wham, bam, after I have the baby, now I have all of this going on. Because I had some baby blues. I had cleaned myself up, girl. I had got back into my jeans and was looking real cute and was waiting for my husband to come home. Then I started to lactate. Then the baby started to cry. Then she threw up all over herself. Oh, my God, I thought I was going to pull my hair out. So that's just a small snippet. But just think if you've got 1, 2, 3 kids. Just think if you don't have any other support. Just think if you're financially destitute. All of those things are huge impactors on how you relate to your child and through the birthing process. So now, Jackie, when you're not doing the heavy lifting of loving on people and supporting women through childbirth, what do you do for entertainment? What do you do for fun?
I am fortunate to have a large component of friends, and I have moved several times in my life, so those friends are kind of in many places. As one of my financial people just pointed out, I seem to have a monthly budget on airfare, which I argued about, but so I'm typically a very social person, and so I get out and about with you know, travel or just friends in the area. I love to ride my bike about around Lake Miramar, which is an awesome setting. Mm-hmm. And yoga and oh yeah, it's beautiful there. Yoga and
we'll have to meet for a ride.
Very,
I'll bring my bike over.
Yeah. Would love to. Okay. Would love to. Yes.
And I want to ask you one other question because you brought up yoga. What is your feeling about prenatal yoga and prenatal massages? Do you find that those are really valuable? I found that mine was phenomenal. It just really helped me control my mindset, helped me control my thoughts, and helped me control my breathing. And breathing is key. Do you agree?
I totally do, yes. I think both of those are amazing resources during pregnancy and any time and continuing postpartum. There's an amazing woman in Northern California that I met, Jane Austin, in the San Francisco area, and she even has a video, but she does prenatal yoga, and she has an amazing practice, and the women that she's able to share that with are so happy and able to do so well with pregnancy and postpartum. I think also that becomes a little bit of a financial discussion because there's many moms that don't have the financial ability to access those things. So if our system is not, you know, providing it, then, you know, they're just kind of left out. But if you have the ability to access it, both of those are amazing.
I don't know if you can speak to this or how much you want to speak to this, but I am a firm and strong supporter of stem cell research. And I know that the umbilical cords are being retained to help sustain people and to harvest the stem cells. Do you have a position on that?
Well, as a midwife, going back, you know, as far as there's been women helping women in birth, we've been saying, you know, to leave the cord intact until it stops pulsating and let the natural physiology transfer those stem cells to the baby from their own placenta. And so that's typically what we do. We do have families who request that we collect stem cell or the blood for them. And we try to wait, you know, at least a couple minutes. So that process can begin, but then we do collect the rest for whatever they're planning to use it for. So
that
I'm
would be
kind
something
of
that if you,
on that. Yep.
Yeah, is that something
yeah.
that you would, as a you know, as a parent, and you have the information, and you would be able to retain that? Is that an additional cost? Is that I don't know, that'd be something that'd be covered by insurance. You know, how do you tell them? Oh, you know, well. We want to put in a claim because we wanted to keep the placenta and the umbilical cord and, you know, all of that for stem cell. You know, how does that work?
Well, the placenta is never collected. Sometimes there is a piece of the cord collected with the blood, too. That is totally up to the family to pay for that process. We do release the placenta to the parents if they want it. Many women encapsulate their placenta or make it into capsules. And believe that it helps with postpartum depression and increasing their iron stores. So many women do take their placenta home with them for that process. But the blood collection is a very, you know, medical, sterile thing and done by the provider at the birth.
Right. Well, you know what? You have been a wealth of information, and we kind of jumped all over and hit certain points of interest, but I want my brains to go back. I want them to, if they have any questions, to please contact me via my Facebook, inbox me. I'm going to get in contact with Jackie and see if we can collect those questions and come back and have another session because there's so much to talk about and you are a wealth of information. Is there a way that we can get in contact with you or is there a group or organization that you want us to support or look into? How can we help you in your work in helping women give birth?
Well, I am a member of the California Nurse Midwife Association and the American College of Nurse Midwives, which is our national organization. So that is, you know, one way to contact me. I do have I think I gave you that connection to my my profile on the California Nurse Midwife Facebook.
Yes.
That's there and is easy to find me there. I also wanted to say that I would, today in Washington, D.C., is the March for Moms, having to do with maternal health care, and it's at 1 o'clock in D.C., and so if anyone's interested in looking up information about the maternal death rate in this country and the things we're doing to try to turn that around, particularly for women of color, they could, you know, look into that and pay attention on the news and see what's going on with that to help change our statistics in that area, which are abysmal.
Well, thank you so much. You know, and I just really find that it is disheartening that here in 2019 that there is such a disproportionate of resources and help, and we're still seeing a lot of women of color struggling and, you know, losing their babies to miscarriages or stillbirths at an alarming rate. So we want to definitely talk about that. We want to definitely kind of find out what's the root cause and try to find a solution. That's what we do here on The Edge, Brains. We look for solutions to everyday problems with great people like Nurse Jackie Hendricks here on The Edge. Go back, listen to other edgy conversations. Blog Talk, Twitter, Instagram, Spotify, iTunes, the whole gamut. I'm all over the planet. I'm all over the planet circulating it because I want to bring the best information to you. Again, thank you so much for your time and energy and dedication, Nurse Jackie. I love you.
Thank you, April. It's a pleasure.
All right, bye, brains. Go out and make a baby. Bye.